Let us invoke the Lord's grace as we study and meditate together. And may my guru, my teacher's blessings be upon me today. Thank you. Today we are starting a new book. The previous Gita, chapter 13, was almost done. There were only one more idea left, which talks about the glory of the path of meditation. And it says, to summarize the last two verses, which we didn't do, is that a meditator is higher than a karma yogi, higher than a man of service, higher than a man of devotion, and even higher than a man of knowledge. And whether you're on the path of service, love or devotion for God, or knowledge, all three paths culminate in the practice of meditation. And so Krishna tells the student, he says, be a meditator. No matter which path you are, ultimately you have to take the path of meditation, because that is the fastest way to reach God. And in the last verse, Krishna says that the one who is devoted to me, who is devoted to the Lord and does all his activities devoted to me, is the dearest to me. And so that's why he has glorified the path of meditation. So that's why I thought we should do this book of called Meditation and Life. All of you have it. And it's by Swami Chinmayananda Ji. We call him Pujya Gurudev. That means most revered teacher. And just, I'll spend about 5 minutes summarizing his life. Of course, his accomplishments were so vast that it is impossible even to cover them in an hour. In fact, I think some of you saw that movie about his life. It's a beautiful movie. But just to briefly summarize, Swamiji, he was born in India in 1916. And in his young age, he grew up in a very, very religious family where they did a lot of rituals, a lot of prayers for God. And he imbibed those values, those cultures. But as often happens in people when they're in childhood in a very spiritual home, when they become youth, they rebel. And so he went the extreme, other extreme, where he became an atheist, said there is no God and, you know, things like that. But he was deeply cared about the future of India, and India was involved in the freedom struggle in those days, freedom from British. And so he got involved in the freedom struggle, played a, you know, significant role, as you can see in that movie. And but then the British discovered that he was involved in that, and so they arrested him. But they not only arrested him, treated him so badly in prison that he was almost dead. They said he's not going to live one more night. And so rather than having a death in the prison, they just dumped him on the street, you know, let him die on the street. People will think something happened. He was, you know, had been dehydrated and malnourished, and he was almost dead. And it so happened a lady was driving by in her car, and she asked her chauffeur to stop the car, saw this young man. And so she took him. She didn't know him, but just out of mercy, took him to her house, fed him and nursed him, and in a few weeks actually got him back to health. So he survived that, and then he decided to become a journalist and write in the newspapers, which would give greater exposure to these ideas above of nationalism and, you know, things like that. And so he became a well-known journalist, but then he decided that these monks who were living in the Himalayas had been, according to him, taking advantage of the people, and they are worthless and not doing any work and just staying there and, you know, expecting people to feed them and take care of them. So he decided he would expose these, you know, monks and how they were cheating the people. And so he decided to go there and live among them and find out and then write an expose about how they are, you know, misleading the people. And it so happened the first monks where he went to was a doctor who had actually become a monk. And so he was not only practicing medicine, hundreds of patients were being treated free every day in his clinic. He himself would treat hundreds of patients. But he was also teaching, he was also studying, writing books, letters, and from morning to night. And he said, look at this man, you know, how hard he is working, how much he's doing for others. And I thought they are all crooks. And he was so taken aback. He said, compared to him, I do nothing. And this person is so much older than me. And so he was so impressed that he decided that he's going to become a monk and join, you know. So he asked the teacher, the doctor, to induct him into the sainthood. And he was, and given the name Swami Chinmayananda. And then he started learning, and this doctor realized that his thirst for knowledge is so high that he needs to go to a more advanced teacher, Swami Tapovan, whose picture is in the main hall. And so Swami Chinmayananda went to this teacher, studied for many years, deeply meditated, and became one with the truth. He realized the truth. And then he decided that this knowledge was too precious to be kept just in the Himalayas, because there were very few people at that time who even knew this Vedanta and Upanishads and Gita and all this ancient knowledge of meditation, yoga. So he decided to spread this knowledge. And after getting his teacher's blessings, he started traveling through India. His first talk, there were only four speakers who attended. And soon, but his ability to speak, and he spoke in English, which nobody at that time, hardly anybody, spoke in English, though a lot of people knew English, but spiritual knowledge was not taught in English. And so he started speaking in English, and soon his fame spread, and after hundreds and eventually thousands of people would attend his lectures. And he started traveling through the length and breadth of India. And then his followers decided to make the mission called Chinmaya Mission, which we are a member of. And after having traveled in India, he then was invited to speak abroad. And so he came to the US, where he spoke in San Jose, and that was where the first center of the Chinmaya Mission was established. And then in Piercy in Northern California, they have a retreat area which he loved to be at. He would stay there and do his talks there. And then he traveled through the whole US and other parts of the world, in Europe, in Asia, Australia, in East Africa, South Africa. So there are Chinmaya Mission centers now throughout the world. There are about 300 centers where thousands of people are studying. You know, there are children's classes, adult classes, women's study groups, you know, senior citizens groups. And then also they're doing a lot of community service, upliftment of widows, upliftment of women and children who have been mistreated by their husbands. Village upliftment, medical care, building hospitals, schools, colleges, free dispensaries. So a lot of social work is going on, but the main focus of Chinmaya Mission is knowledge. And that is what we are also doing here, spreading this ancient knowledge in English to the modern people. And so that's what the Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda taught us. And then he established also a school for teaching teachers, so where students would stay for 2.5 years completely free, and they would be taught this knowledge, and then they would be able to become teachers of this knowledge. There was no compulsion. The teaching was free, even the stay was free, and after that, if they wished, they could teach, or otherwise they could go back to their families. And a large number of them, each time, every 2.5 years, they have a new batch. And almost 3/4 of them do stay and continue the activities. And all the Swamis who have come here, Swami Chinmayananda, Tejo Mayananda, Vimalji, and all of those we have seen, all are students of that particular school. And so this is our founder, Swami Chinmayananda. Just wanted to pay our homage to him, because whatever we have, all the books, the materials, the videos, the CDs, a lot of them are his gift or his students who have taught us. And whatever little I know, it is because of Swami Chinmayananda and all the other Swamis of Chinmaya Mission. So today we are going to start this book called Meditation and Life. And what I'll do is each week I'll prepare one topic and speak briefly, but I would request each and every one of you to have the book to read the next topic before you come. I think you just got it today, so today will be just an introduction. But read the next topic so that I'll speak less. We hopefully will have more of a discussion where people can contribute or add, or you know, if there's something they, you know, they wish to clarify, or something I may have missed. So I would like to make it more interactive and more of a discussion rather than one person speaking. But today I'll just briefly summarize the first topic, which is on page one. You don't have to read it right now because I'll be taking some points from it, but mostly just expanding on what is given. But you're welcome to read it at home later on today and then follow it next week. So it's called the state of the world. What is the world? World is what we deal with. In Sanskrit, it's called loka. Loka means the worlds. And there are different worlds. It's not only this earth or this universe, but each one of us has a different world. One world is my family. Then one world is my church. One world is my community. And then if I'm an accountant, then when I go to an accountant's conference, I'm dealing with accountants. So my world is accounting, where all day I'm doing numbers and tax returns and, you know, deductions. A lawyer, his world is law. So he's living in a world of law where he's studying law, taking depositions, practicing in the court. Doctor is seeing patients. His is a world of medicine. So we are in multiple worlds we deal with constantly throughout the day. It's not only this one earth, but each one of us, and each one's dealing is different. You know, and that's why each one of us are the product of our background, what we learned from our parents, what we were born with, and what we have accumulated. So as long as we are alive, we have to deal with the world. Now, how to deal with the world is the message of spirituality, is the message of religion. How I should deal with my life, because life's challenges will be there constantly. We'll always be faced with challenges. Nobody's life is 100%, you know, going upward. There'll be some downs and some ups and some side and crooked and, you know, round and round. All those things happen to all of us. So the topic that we have covered today is called despair amid abundance. Now, why does it say despair amid abundance? Because at this moment, if we look at the state of the world, I mean, we have made tremendous scientific progress, even compared to when I was a child. When I was a child, you know, very few people had cars. There was no TV. You know, there was only radio. Telephones were very rudimentary. They didn't work. If you had to call international, you had to book a call, so-called, you know, which you had to reserve it. And the operator, if she got hold of the other person, would call you. Sometimes you have to wait 8-10 hours, sometimes all day. I mean, most people walked on foot or bicycled. And I mean, compared to that, look where we are, you know, with internet and with space travel and with cars and with planes. And we have conquered nature in a way, because the weather, it doesn't affect us. We can air condition our homes or heat our homes. We get running hot water, you know, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We have gone to the edges of space. Our solar system, our vehicles have gone. If we only went to the moon, we have gone to the bottom of the space. We have, you know, split the atom. We have, the fundamentals of human life have been accomplished by us. And through this vehicle called internet, we have become so connected. You know, anything, something, there's an explosion in Iraq, or there's an explosion in, within seconds, you know, you can see the pictures and you can get a detailed description of it. I mean, we know what is happening in any corner of the world. You can Google And any, it's so amazing, any Sanskrit words, all I have to do is enter the first two words in Google. And this is Sanskrit, it's not English. And immediately the entire verse comes to me on that phone, which book it is from, which chapter, which verse, the English translation, and at least 8 or 10 different commentaries and translations on that one Sanskrit verse. It's so amazing. Any song from any country of the world, you just put the first two lines, first two words, and the entire song comes. You can watch it. So we have become, the science has become, has made the world closer. But has it, do we really feel closer? The outer world, we have progressed a lot. But have we made progress in our inner world, in our mind and in our intellect? Have we become more caring? Have we become more unselfish? Have we become more sharing? Have we become more compassionate? And we find that things are getting worse. There is more selfishness. There is more I and mine. And there is so much barbarism, you know, so much killing and, you know, suicide bombing and just widespread slaughter. You know, so many entire communities have been slaughtered. Thousands of people, we have found in recent times, when it happened in Yugoslavia, where it was split into 2-3 countries, has happened in Africa, in the Middle East, in Africa. It is wholesale slaughter is going on, even in Asia, so many parts. And the humans, instead of becoming more human, yes.
So who's doing all that?
Humans, people, we are. We are.
But there's God in all of us.
Yes. Definitely.
Okay, all right.
God is in all of us.
Gotcha.
But as we have talked before, God doesn't do anything. He just gives us the ability to function. And it's up to us, how do we choose that power, like nuclear power. You know, nuclear power is there, atomic power. But whether you use atomic power to cure cancer or make electricity, or you use the atomic power to destroy cities, the choice is ours. Atomic power is neutral. It says, I give you the ability. Now, what do you do with that? Same way, God has given us the ability. We all have God in us. Even the murderer, even the person who is pulling the gun, he gets the ability to pull the gun because God is in him. If God wasn't, he wouldn't be able to. He would be dead. So, even though the world has come together, but individuals have gone further apart. We don't find the closeness. We don't find the love. We don't find the compassion. Each country is, you know, for itself, each community, each individual, even among families, everybody's doing their own thing. You know, there is no common goal or purpose what the family is for. This reminds me of a story. So this husband on Friday evening tells his wife, he says, honey, this weekend, let's have a wonderful time. I want to have, you know, let us have a wonderful Saturday and a wonderful Sunday. So she said, honey, that sounds great. Bye, I'll see you Monday. Yes, let's have a wonderful time. So even though the world has become together, but people have become further apart. There is so much stress. In fact, I was reading that the top two drugs prescribed in this country, and not only then throughout the world, are number one is psychiatric medicines for stress, and number two are medicines for ulcers, which are also, you know, to some extent related to these are the number one and number two, and now very fast catching up are pain medicines, heavy duty opioids and narcotics, which people are just abusing. Either they are buying on the street or they are getting from their doctors for no reason, even there is no pain. And now with marijuana on the scene, it's just going to become a wildfire. So stress has increased so much. You know, there is so much stress. You know, people are going to psychiatrists, psychologists, taking drugs, you know, alcohol to just numb their pain. And apparently, as Swamiji in his book says, we are addicted to misery. Misery has become our second nature. You know, despite all this abundance, and people say, we have never had so much, and we have, you know, so many accomplishments of science. Every day you hear about, you know, new and new discoveries, new and new inventions, newer and newer. And yet people are they any happier? See, if they were materially we have progress. We have nice homes, we have nice clothes, we have jewelry, we have cars, we have planes, we travel, we go wherever we want. But are we happier? And that is the million-dollar question. Are we happier than our grandparents? And we need to think about it. You know, they didn't have all the comforts, but did they have this degree of stress? You know, did they have this many problems? It's not meant to, I don't mean to start this book on a very, what shall I say, pessimistic note, not to depress the people, but that's just the realistic state of the world. The reason we want to do that is because, and any time when you start a project, you first say, what is the problem? Let me know what the problem is. Even in math, you know, if you go to a math class, they'll say, this is the problem. Now, how do we solve it? Or in chemistry, or in physics, you know, they say there is this research project. This is the thing we need to know. So the problem is given first, and then they come to a conclusion. So today I took this liberty to talk about the problem. And then next week onwards, we'll see how the teacher guides us to a solution. And ultimately, this will lead us to the technique and path of meditation. But in the beginning, he wants to kind of give us a broad picture of where we are and why we need this spiritual knowledge. Why do we need meditation? So that was the purpose. So I'm sorry it's such a pessimistic class, but it's realistic. It's what it is. So I'd like to open it for questions and comments. Please feel free to contribute. Yes.
I think what's saying is it's just negativity has become a habit. And then they feed off each other.
Right, that's what they say. Now, we are addicted to misery.
I think it's true.
Right.
There is a lot of horror and evil and ugly out there and almost everywhere. I mean, the work world, the corporate world, I find it very difficult to sustain the me and the self in relation to the big self.
Right.
Out there in the corporate jungle. My question was, how do I respond to that?
Right.
When I became aware that I had this thing cycling in my thoughts, you know, some negative thing about some judgment or some criticism or just, you know, misery, I'd stop it and become present and realize the blessing of that moment through meditation.
Okay. On behalf of the dark side, I would just say that the 7/8 of the human beings on this planet do not have drinkable water, sanitized water with which to cook or drink or wash their hands or anything. With the TVs, the cameras, everything, I'm more and more aware. I mean, there's people living in Massachusetts with billion-dollar homes and children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren that never worked a day. And then outside of here, there's just the same nightmare there was 2,000 years ago.
Yes.
And so I'm saying, why shouldn't I be miserable?
Right, okay. Anybody else?
I just noticed with myself, like, where my consciousness is, when it's up, then nothing bothers me, you know, and when it starts to go, you know, I'm bothered by things, and I can tell, like, if I do something wrong, let's say I yell at somebody too much or whatever, I can feel the it's the drop in height. Like, right. I'm up there, I'm high up, and then I do something wrong. Boom, it's like I've lost, like the darkness came in. And then when I start getting back, doing good things, and then the light comes back in, and I feel normal again. So when I'm going through the day, I'm always watching where I'm at, because that's how I'm seeing the world. And I try to keep myself at a certain level. Like right now, I'm just average, because I just kind of have a really bad day. I kind of like think, you know, but I, you know, by nighttime, I hope to bring this back up. But that's kind of how I get through my day, is just monitoring myself.
Thank you. Anything you would like to add?
I totally agree with you, being aware what goes on, how, for the news, always will be like that. To me, it's just how this world is, and how it's nothing in my control, nothing I can do. But it's only my responsibility, is my duty is to make sure it doesn't affect me in a sense that it doesn't make me unhappy, or because this is just a physical, you know, there's more to it, and more precious inside you and yourself, and you know, that's being aware all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a time when mind is such a monkey, this monkey is out of control, and you feel, especially being a mother, you know, the children, it's over.
Thank you. I think I would like to side with the positive, because I, like when he was mentioning the secret, the message of that movie, what I remember is that you create the world, your own world. If you think constantly negative, you will attract negative energy and negative things will happen. If you think positive, then positive things will happen. And that's law of nature. And not only that, but what we do is, first of all, problems have been there always. Even at the time of Jesus, there were so many wars. Jesus himself was, you know, crucified. At the time of Ram and Krishna, when God appeared on earth, there were still wars and there was still violence. Only thing was, with the internet, it gets magnified. With the TV, you know, we see a lot more. It seems that it is much worse, but problems have always been there among humans. And problems will be there. There will be wars, there will be conflicts. But like some of you said, I have to focus on myself. Not that I become selfish, but that the world will always create problems. If I let the world get me down, then I will be miserable. And the more miserable I have, the more negative energy I will attract. The more negative things will happen to me in my life. If I am positive, and what I do is I focus. You know, what I do is anytime there is a problem, personal problem in my life, I put that on one side. And then I draw a mental line. Okay, there is this problem. And then on the other side, I list all the things that are good. I have my health, I have my family, I have my practice, I have this, I have... So when you add all my children, grandchildren, when you add all those things up, then you realize how much we take things for granted. No doubt, there are problems in Africa, there are problems in Asia, there are problems of poverty. What I believe is, do what you can, as much as you can, to help somebody. You help maybe an organization that is doing work, or some individual that you know is working hard and needs help to go through school or go through college, or some particular organization that is working for the blind or work. So wherever I can, I do. Otherwise, it is his world. Let him worry about it. I tell him, you have created this world. It's your problem. Why should I worry about it? I can't do anything about what's happening in Africa, or people are dying. By my becoming miserable, all I'm doing is making myself miserable. So I say, I'll do my best wherever I am to make this world a better place, and rest, let it happen. So by thinking positive, you will attract positive. So I've always been a very optimistic person. Even when I was a child, I always somehow... In fact, I used to always say, God is my friend and he'll take care of me. I don't know how I knew that. But as a child, I used to say that. And I've always had this attitude of a friend. I don't think of him as a master or father in heaven or this imposing figure who has created... I say, he's my friend. So with a friend, you are not afraid, and you know, you talk to them, and So I think positive thinking, I would vote with the positive
And I'm
thinkers.
going to change my vote to positive.
Good.
Yeah,
Good. So let us meditate. We have 20 minutes. If we can close the door, and there are those three horizontal bars, just push them down. Those three bars, that will reduce the light. Eventually, the light will go off completely when we stop talking. So we'll all be in the dark, but we'll just meditate for 20 minutes. No, leave that off.
Leave that one on.
No, leave it off. Yeah, it's okay. It'll go off. We'll just meditate in the dark. It's no problem. There's some lights come from around, so it's okay. So we have 20 minutes. Today we shall go inward and try to discover the inner joy and inner peace and take away this negative atmosphere that we have. Let us find joy within. Let us find positive. The more you go deeper within, that's what I find. When the mind becomes completely quiet, or not completely, but relatively quiet, there is like an inner pool of joy that it discovers. So let us find that today, the inner joy. Eyes closed. Back erect but not stiff. With a cheerful attitude, meditation is my appointment with God, God who is within me as life. Consciously relax the body. Start from the head. Focus on each part, the face, the neck, shoulders, and so on. Move down to the feet, and then consciously move back from the feet up to the head, relaxing each part, completely relaxed. Keep the body relaxed and concentrate on the breath. Take slow, deep breaths. Full attention on the breath. If you wish, as you breathe out, you can mentally chant Om. That helps to keep the attention on the breath. And Om, being God's name, is most holy. Or you can chant Jesus or Guru or Buddha, whatever. But as you chant out, chant the name of the God. body still relaxed. Deep breaths. Full attention on the breath and nothing else. Continue to focus on the breath. As the mind becomes quiet, by relaxing the body and observing the breath, the mind will slowly stop running. Bring the mind's attention to here and now. For the next few minutes, I have to not let the mind run out into the world. As the mind becomes quieter, direct its attention inwards. Go deep into your personality. Dive deep into this ocean of peace and silence and bliss and joy that we all have, but we seem to have lost it. We have lost contact with that inner divinity. So the next few minutes, let us concentrate on that inner joy. If the mind wanders, bring it back in the now and re-enter the inner zone of silence. We'll practice that for a few minutes. Oh.